part of this podcast, Bill and I talk about the role of complexity and how change actually occurs, the role of quiet and reflection and growth, and how one person can change the destiny of the entire world.
I think probably the question I get most, Pat, is, okay, Bill, so if you're saying growth only occurs in a state of discomfort, should I be uncomfortable all the time? No, you shouldn't be, because you can't live there all the time. It is our order. It is the times of comfort that prepare us for those times of discomfort, that allow us to get into these points of discomfort. If you're in too much discomfort, you can trip into chaos. Or if you get pushed too far, you can get tripped into chaos. And that's not a healthy environment to be. So there's this, and when we study high-performing teams, there is a blend of order and complexity to the highest-performing teams. And that's where the magic happens. You have to have some of both.
That makes total sense. When I interviewed Eric Weinmayer, he climbs mountains. He's a real adventurer, and he's blind.
Wow.
He climbed Everest, the Seven Summits, did the Colorado River Rapids. I mean, really impressive stuff. But what he does behind the scenes is he works very, very hard. He spends years training to do some of these things. He had a ladder set up in his backyard so he could practice walking a ladder with crampons so as to navigate the crevasses on Everest and things like that. I think he worked for 4 years before he went down the Colorado River Rapids. So he was very willing to take on that complexity and even chaos. But underlying it all was an enormous amount of planned effort, putting the right team together, getting the team working together. It was very much a blend of all these different components.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
And it led to great success.
There's a lot of, you know, we do now, Excel Institute started a division called Excel Sports. And we do a lot of work with student athletes and their coaches. And one of the things we're learning, and sports psychology too, we sports psychologists we work with, and a good friend of mine who is in that field says that preparation is the number one ingredient to performance. There's a lot of things behind preparation, but preparation is the first ingredient. That performance won't happen or won't be sustained without preparation. So, yeah, absolutely.
No, I tend to agree with that. I think that we live in a society that wants instant gratification, and we tend to think everything is Instagram perfect or easy, and it's not. I think underlying any degree of success or accomplishment is an enormous amount of work for most people, work and a willingness to take some risk.
Yeah, you know, you bring up an interesting point, Pat, and there's a lot of talk about instant gratification. And I'm still up in the air on that one a little bit, but here's where I'm not up in the air. And maybe these two tie together somehow. We could even probably do another podcast on this someday, but the parents today, and believe me, I've fallen into this category. So I'm guilty, but I acknowledge that and I recognize that. And I've changed that. And I told the story, for example, in the TED Talk about my daughter playing tennis. But it's a parent's unwillingness to let their kids skin a knee. It's the parent's unwillingness to let their kids fail, let their kids be in discomfort that would allow that growth. That's just non-existent. These helicopter parents, they hover in and they do everything from, they don't allow you to fall down, let alone they don't allow you to not get accepted into a college. Look at the tuition scandal. The admission scandal. Those things, we have to look at ourselves as parents in the mirror before we start. And I'm not saying you were blaming because I know you weren't. But before we blame a generation, we have to look at ourselves and say, hey, what are we going to do moving forward? Just like I had to do with my kids. I had to look myself in the mirror and say, you know, wait a minute. Am I removing that complexity, that discomfort? And just putting them back in order, making their lives comfortable. And guess what? I was. In both athletically as well as emotionally, a lot of things. But now I've gotten to the point where, you know what? Hey, you're in pain. I'm going to let you suffer for a while because I know it's good for you. My kids wonder what happened to dad.
No, but I think it's true. I think we grow out of painful and difficult situations, out of having to make sense, sometimes out of chaos, or become so dissatisfied with order that we're propelled into a new avenue.
Yes, Pat, those past experiences are golden. I mean, that makes up who you are today. I was a very challenged young man. I was kicked out of school. I was the principal wanted to suspend me from the entire school district. I didn't do well academically. And when I think back about all the trouble I got in, now I wasn't destructive. I didn't do drugs. I wasn't like that kind of kid. I was behaviorally challenged. But when I think of all the trouble I got in, I look today and that's kind of everything that wraps up into who I am today. So we can't look back at our lives and say, hey, we're sorry we did those things. I think we all have that. But man, if you didn't ever look back and say you weren't sorry you did some things, that means you haven't evolved.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I don't think life is necessarily meant to be easy. I kind of look at it as a road trip. And I try to figure out, as things come up, what am I supposed to learn?
Yeah, you're right. It's that journey that makes it so wonderful.
And if I don't learn it, I know the opportunity to learn it will come up again.
If not, you can make it. We call it triggering complexity. You can do it.
Talk about triggering complexity.
Well, there are three primary ways that discomfort is created when we look at it, especially, well, just in the world in general. It can be forced upon you. The pandemic is another, an example. You can't say, hey, I like not to participate in the pandemic. It's here. It's forced upon you. When I got fired, that was forced upon me. I didn't elect to get fired. But at the same time, I couldn't say, I like not to participate in your firing me. I think I'll just stick around. I won't leave. someone who gets a disease, who is ill. So complexity can be forced on you. And if a lot of people right now probably think, okay, so where's the growth in that? If you say growth occurs in that, where's the growth? It's attitudinal. We learn things. If you allow yourself, those are huge growth moments. So you can trigger complexity because it's forced on you. You can trigger complexity by triggering yourself. In the TED Talk, I talked about this young woman by the name of Claudette Colvin, who actually was the first person to not give up her seat on a bus in Montgomery, Alabama. And Rosa Parks got all the credit, when the reality is it wasn't Rosa Parks. It was a young woman by the name of Claudette Colvin. 9 months before Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat, it was a 15-year-old girl who did it first. But
I love that story.
She wasn't really well publicized because of her attitude, which is wonderful. I've seen interviews with her and I've read stuff up on Ms. Colvin. I think she's still alive today. But she didn't take a lot of crap from anybody. I think who Rosa Parks, some people felt as though at the time she was a better representation. But Claudette Colvin, it was her refusal to give up her seat that created everything the way it is today. She's the one who got the ball rolling. So we can trigger it ourselves. That's the example. When she sat in that, they happened to pick on a 15-year-old girl who had just spent the previous month studying Black history. Well, and especially someone who was strong in their beliefs. And she just said, no, I'm not moving. And everything kind of went. And she was the one who testified in front of the Supreme Court as well. So she triggered complexity and just simply by saying, I'm not moving. And look at everything that has happened since because of her single action. So we can trigger things ourselves and create a downstream impact. And the last way to trigger complexity is the role of teacher, coach, boss. We know people by and large want to be in order. So they need to be moved into that discomfort because they won't do it on their own. And so that's the role of a teacher, of a coach, of a boss, to know me well enough to know when's a good time to get me uncomfortable, to help me grow. And that's the role of a coach, right? Or a teacher or your boss. It's to help you get to a place you couldn't get to without them. And that doesn't happen if you don't move into these states of discomfort. So again, in summary, it can be complexity, discomfort can be forced upon you. You can trigger it yourself, or someone can trigger it for you.
Are there certain personality traits that make people more willing to take on complexity and change?
That's a really good question, Pat. I don't have any research on that. I don't have any science on that in terms of just the actual personality traits. But you're making me wonder. So no, I can't intelligently remark on that. I apologize.
Oh, no, I look at people do such remarkable things. And I talk to so many different people in this podcast, and I start to see these threads that move through all the stories. And one of the things that I see is as one thread is incredible perseverance by many people as they navigate a bump in the road. And it just makes me wonder, wow, what are the commonalities in their makeup? What are the commonalities maybe in their upbringing or in their response to chaos?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, is perseverance a personality trait, or is perseverance something that can be developed? Can I, Angela Duckworth's talk and book on grit, is that something we can evolve into? I believe we can. So, yeah, I mean, you're bringing up some things. Heck yes. the grit, perseverance. Yeah. I don't know, fear.
Well, and I look at fear, and I think the other side of fear is courage.
Yeah, so, but then again, we're redefining, or we're just putting another word on the unknown. Understanding, I think education plays a role in it too. Understanding, I was able to change my behaviors once I really understood that, oh, okay, so this... their discomfort is what's going to help them become better human beings, going to make them stronger, develop that grit. So education, I think, is a component of it too. I don't think it's an introversion, extroversion thing, though. Yeah.
No, I don't either.
I don't know. So you're begging a wonderful question, Pat.
No, if anything, on the introvert, extrovert side, as an introvert myself, I would be more inclined to think that the person who goes within is going to be able to sustain more perseverance or grit. But that isn't necessarily so.
I don't know. You made a good point. I'm an extrovert. And one of the things I have learned is to use your words, to be more within, to find more quiet, to have that be my growth, because I was always wanted to be stimulated to be around other people. And what was uncomfortable to me was being alone, was to be in times of quiet. Now I literally carve out quiet on my calendar and say, this is for me and I can't be around anyone else. So that's part of my journey too, is to find the quiet.
Yeah, I found the quiet, I think, mostly through meditation. I've had a pretty serious meditation practice for over 10 years now, and it's been life-changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, good for you. I applaud that. I discovered it 4 years ago, and to say it's been life-changing would be an understatement for me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It seems like we make major changes in our lives when we hit a bump in the road. And I had been through a lifetime of just chronic back pain that culminated some 4 years ago. I think this 4 years ago, this spring or now, to a point where I can walk more than 100 yards. I could get up, walk 100 yards, but then the pain would be so crippling. I'd had to literally sit down. I was being run through airports by those little buggies, those electric buggies, and I had people pushing me in wheelchairs. I became, by the way, if you're listening, if you're on this podcast, don't ever sit on those disabled seats by the by the door and the gate and the jetway and the terminal and airports. I needed those seats. I wanted all my hotel rooms to be right next to the elevator because I couldn't walk down with luggage. I had to, every speaking engagement I ever did during that time, I sat on a stool. And there are times I quite literally had to crawl from my bedroom to the bathroom and couldn't even make it out the hotel door. And that went on for 100 days. And I thought, okay, something's got to change. Because the doctors told me it was time for surgery. And I said, I'm not letting you in around my spine. And so I read a book called The Mind-Body Connection. And because of my reading there, thinking, okay, so the book's basically saying that I could be my own problem. So through three things, meditation first, second, journaling, what I call brain download, and number three was gratitude to every morning or five mornings a week. And in 2 weeks, the pain went away and it hasn't been back for 4 years. And that's 30 years of back pain.
That is amazing. That is a fantastic story. Personally, I have come to believe that our minds are so much more powerful than we can imagine. If you could take a huge leap into the future, all we would need would be orthopods to set broken bones. Other than that, we'd be able to cure ourselves of almost everything. We're not there yet. We're not that evolved. But I do think the role that our mind plays is substantial.
Yes, Pat. And thanks for bringing this up. And that's if anybody's listening to this, well, those who are listening to this podcast, man, if there's one thing you walk away with, it is don't ever give up on the power within your own mind. When I focused above the shoulders, guess what? Everything below the shoulders fell into place. I used to be hard on myself. Well, you know, you're not disciplined enough to work out. Well, guess what? When I started being disciplined enough just to meditate, gratitudes, and journal, all of a sudden I found the discipline to work out. Everything else just happened. Focus above the shoulders. Everything below the shoulders will fall into place.
How does that play into managing complexity?
Really good question. I acknowledge it now. The ability, meditation, what it allows me to do is to be present, to be mindful. And I know when I am in a state of discomfort. And when I'm in a state of discomfort, I can now make a conscious decision. Do I want to stay there and use this discomfort to grow, or do I want to get out of it? Because now I know it's causing it because I'm conscious of it. And it's not always wise to stay in discomfort, as I mentioned earlier. So more than anything else, that's what meditation did for me and made me present. And when I'm present, I can acknowledge times of discomfort. And then I can manage them.
That's fascinating. Now, is that maybe part of the answer to helping people move from a state of some complacency or excessive order into a greater degree of comfort with complexity? Just that awareness?
Okay, ask that again. Say that again. Make sure I understand your question.
Is that, okay, yeah, I'm thinking loud here. Is that awareness, that heightened awareness that allows you to kind of become your own witness, if you will, as a result of meditation, to witness your own thoughts, et cetera, and make conscious choices. Is that ability perhaps part of learning to manage complexity?
I think what you said makes sense. And that's what I can say is what happened to me. So I can't tell you it worked for everybody, but I can tell you it worked for me. That awareness of myself, how I'm responding to things, to you know, we all have these forces, the stimuli that are bombarding us all the time. Being aware enough to understand how they're impacting me. I mean, my goodness, I was reading something on the Washington Post the other day, and I'm reading this article, and I'm thinking, I do not like how this article is making me feel. Shut my computer. So, I mean, not because it was going against what I believe, but I'll challenge my thoughts and beliefs all the time. But I realize that I am allowing the stimulus in my body that is putting me in the impact is a bad mood. And my team and my family, everybody around me deserves better than that. So I'm not going to allow myself that. So then I got to pick the times and places to educate myself and challenge my thinking in ways to grow. But that was not one of them. Now, I still read the Post. It's not what I'm saying. But there are certain things within that I can't read.
No, that makes total sense. Actually, I'm very sensitive to that as well. I stopped watching network TV ages ago. because I didn't like the way it made me feel. And I actually noticed the reaction in my animals in my house that when the TV's on, they were far less relaxed. When I turned it off, their demeanor really changed. And I thought, isn't that interesting?
I'll have to look for that. Because I am, that's part of my order in the evening. I find comfort to just sit down in front of the TV on the sofa and just veg out and flip on something mindless, you know, like The Voice.
So if you could leave people with a little bit of advice on managing their personal growth, what would you tell them?
It would be a reiteration of what we just said, Pat, in the sense that you want to manage your growth, understand what creates it, and that is your mind. So the way we put all kinds of practice into developing our bodies, we put all kinds of practice into, say, a sport. Put the same practice into your mental resiliency. Put the same practice into developing a mind. I mean, I do so meditation, listing gratitudes every day, journaling, or what I call, again, brain download. And then there are little things I do to continually challenge the way I see the world. Like recently I started to say, you know what? I've brushed my teeth for 59 years with my right hand. Well, guess what I did? It's now left-handed. And by the way, you like spread stuff all over. It's like, I can't believe how horrible, how uncoordinated I was with my left hand. I realized I put my belt on the exact same way every single day. Change that up. So I try and create a resilient mind through my actions as well as my thinking. So meditate.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path. Because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.